Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. September is National Atrial Fibrillation Awareness Month. I know that's a mouthful, but it is a time to raise awareness about AFib, is what we typically, you'll hear people say. And that's the most common heart rhythm disorder. So we're going to talk about that and its connection to stroke risk and overall heart health. It's also an important opportunity to highlight prevention, early detection, and treatment options. So joining us today is Dr. Jennifer Mabry from Tennessee Tech to share her expertise on recognizing AFib, managing heart health, and helping our community reduce the risk of serious heart complications. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
We're happy to have you share with us. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your education and your role as a nurse practitioner in the community and a professor at the Whitson-Hester School of Nursing?
Sure. I wear many hats, as you mentioned, but let's start with my education because this is going to air during college football season.
It is.
And my first degree was as a nurse, is from Tennessee Tech, Wings Up.
Wings Up.
My master's degree or my nurse practitioner degree, I did obtain from the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. Go Big Orange. And I also got my PhD at the University of Tennessee. Go Big Orange again. So I am a alumni of the Volunteers, and I love football season. And I appreciate you having me on. So my nurse practitioner background is I have done internal medicine. That's my first few years out as a nurse practitioner. And then I went over to a specialty practice here in cardiology. And I did that for 5 years in their office. And then I transitioned to teaching full time at Tech. And that's where I'm at now as a professor. And with Dr. Lee, we both mainly teach the graduate program. We teach other nurse practitioners how to become a nurse practitioner and pass certification. So that is our passion, and it's my passion as well. Mm-hmm. And I love cardiac. That's my background.
Yep, you have a strong background. So tell us, how often have you seen or treated patients with heart rhythm disorders such as atrial fibrillation or AFib? As you've practiced over the years as a nurse practitioner?
So in internal medicine, which that's adults, typically I would see patients that had already been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation and were just maintained on medication.
Okay.
In the cardiology office, I would see new patients that would present with new onset of an arrhythmia, we called it, and that just means that it's an irregular rhythm or a rhythm that we don't really want.
Right.
And I would see them initially, and then we would start medication or treatments on them. So, like you said, it is the most common heart rhythm issue, and with it, people sometimes don't even realize they have it.
Right.
But then some other people do. They feel their heart racing, or they feel like their heart beating out of rhythm, or skipping beats, as I'll have a lot of patients come in and say. So it's very common, more common than you would think.
Yeah. So. And so you've seen both sides of it. Mm-hmm. People that have, you know, just recognizing signs and symptoms and coming in and seeking treatment, and then also just follow up and maintenance and preventing complications that might come from that.
So, yes.
So it sounds like you've seen on both realms. So in your work, what are some of the most important things that you want patients and the public to understand about AFib and heart health just in general?
Okay. Well, I think the first question to answer would be maybe, what is atrial fibrillation?
Yep.
Because that is a mouthful.
What exactly is it?
And so for listeners in the Upper Cumberland, it is the most common type of an irregular heart rhythm. So normally, you know, when you feel somebody's pulse, you'll feel, you know, a boom, a boom. So, and that's in a regular beat. Just like a song, it would be. So that's normal, where the top of the heart and the bottom of the heart are beating in rhythm. So that we call those people in rhythm. So if I'm out of rhythm, like to think of it as a song. So think of it as an orchestra, or maybe think of it as a bluegrass band. And you have a mandolin player and you have a bass player, but they're not in time. So they're beating and they're not playing with each other and it's out of sync. That's the same thing that your heart's doing. So I think the listeners hopefully would understand that the top and the bottom parts of your heart are not beating at the same time. So that's what atrial fibrillation is. And it's based on the atria are the two top chambers of your heart, whereas the ventricles are the two bottom chambers. You have four chambers in your heart.
Okay.
So why does it matter? You know, we talked about what is atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. It's just out of sync. The mandolin player and the bass player are not jiving with each other. Right. They should be playing a song and they're not. So if you have that happen, why does it matter? So the good thing to know for the listeners is it's not immediately life-threatening. If you have an irregular heartbeat or you feel your pulse and you feel it skipping or jumping or it just doesn't feel right, if it's atrial fibrillation, that is not immediately life-threatening for most people. But it can lead to complications.
Yeah.
So you want it to be recognized. So if you feel that or you feel, even lightheaded or dizzy with that irregular heartbeat, the things that we worry about are a stroke. So, and a stroke is where you have a blood clot that's in the heart that goes to your brain. That's very serious, and that can cause a stroke. Or you can have heart failure. So because the heart is not working efficiently, the top and the bottom chambers are not in sync is what we call it. So it just has to work harder. So if you have atrial fibrillation for a long period of time, and especially if your heart rate is fast, it can cause the heart to give out, to stretch and to fail. So those are the two main things we worry about is a stroke and heart failure. So and sometimes the cart and the horse aren't always together. Like some people will have heart failure and then develop AFib. Some people may have high blood pressure and develop AFib. Mm-hmm. And then other people, it's just genetic and they just develop atrial fibrillation for no reason at all.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not something you've done, but we do worry about strokes and heart failure.
Yeah. What about heart health in general? What do you think are important things that you want people or the public to understand about a healthy heart?
So a healthy heart has to do with, I related in terms to patients as plumbing. And if you understand plumbing, you understand what the heart is doing. So the heart is made of those four chambers, you know, two on the top, two on the bottom, and those are the pump. So just like you have a pump on your water system in your home, a pump on your HVAC system at home, it's a pump that pushes fluid around your body, which is your blood. So it's a pump, and it also has pipes on it. So the other thing I think we talked about last time when we talked about high blood pressure was keeping those pipes on the outside of the heart, which is the blood flow to the heart, healthy. And that has to do, we talked about salt and diet, you know, low-fat diet, exercise, things to keep those pipes open and clean, just like you would in your home.
Yep.
You don't want to put a bunch of grease down your sink,
right?
Because you're going to clog it up.
Correct.
Same thing with your heart. You don't want to eat a bunch of things that are processed or high fat because it can clog up those pipes. So just to maintain a heart and make it healthy, those are two items you have to worry about. So I have to worry about how hard the heart is pumping, the pressure, and that's by measuring blood pressure, and then keeping those pipes open so that the heart's healthy on the outside, and that's with nutrition and exercise and sometimes medicines.
Okay. So that's great information for patients and the public to understand what it is to have a healthy heart, what AFib is. So atrial fibrillation, you talked about how it affects the heart, and we've talked about some risks that go along with that. What could we tell people is common signs and symptoms? You mentioned a couple of things like the feeling of the abnormal heart rhythm, the dizziness. Are there other signs and symptoms that people should watch out for or be aware of?
Sure. There's, you know, four or five main, and these would be for lots of different conditions too. But specifically, if you have somebody or a family member or friend, and they tell you that their heart's fluttering, mm-hmm. that's pretty common.
Yep.
Or their heart's racing,
mm-hmm.
Or pounding. Those are all signs that the heart is either working too hard or it's working out of sync.
Yeah.
The top and the bottom aren't working. So that would be the first symptom I would think of. And I think everybody should know how to take their own pulse mm-hmm. and feel their own pulse. And not all of us, but some people do have smartwatches. And some of those smartwatches now will actually give you a heart rhythm. We'll do a little EKG.
Mm-hmm.
On the actual app. It's in the newer ones, but you can actually let it see if your heart is irregular or not. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of know, okay, it feels like it's pounding. Well, let me just double check. So that's one way. The other thing is if somebody gets really short of breath with that.
Yeah.
So they feel fluttering, they feel that pounding or racing, and then they just don't feel like they can catch a good
yeah.
breath. Being overly tired,
yeah.
feeling really weak. With that heart beating like that. And then also, like I mentioned, dizziness. That's
yep.
probably the most common is people
okay.
say, I felt my heart racing and then I got really dizzy and I had to sit down.
Yeah.
Or I stood up too quick while it was doing it and I got lightheaded and I had to sit down or lay down sometimes.
Yeah.
Those are serious symptoms that your body is telling you something's going on.
Yeah.
That you should not ignore.
Well, and that helps people understand, you know, signs and symptoms that recognize you might not know what it is, and it may not be atrial fibrillation, but something's not right, and
right.
it needs evaluation.
Absolutely.
To further see what's going on.
And the nice thing is that you can go to any walk-in clinic. You can go to your PCP. You can go to the emergency room if you feel like that's where you need to go to be seen. And a simple EKG, where we put electrodes on your skin mm-hmm. across your chest, reads that electrical rhythm mm-hmm. And can tell us if you have an irregular heartbeat.
Okay, good to know. I'm joined today by Dr. Jennifer Mabry, family nurse practitioner, and we're talking about heart health and National AFib, which is Atrial Fibrillation Awareness Month, here in September. So just to kind of recap, we were talking just before the break about diagnosing AFib, mm-hmm. and you were mentioning having an electrocardiogram, an EKG.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to that. How is AFib diagnosed, and why is early detection so important?
Mm. Yeah, very, very important to get this seen about early. So we talked about in the first segment, you know, just symptoms. So fluttering, pounding in your chest, lightheadedness, dizziness, shortness of breath, a biggie, that piece, you know, patients will complain of. And if you have any of that, or just ongoing tiredness, you know, that comes on suddenly. It's not like I'm tired all the time. That's a different workup for mm-hmm. a provider. But something, these are new things that happen with your heartbeat feeling kind of out of sync. So if that happens, you can go to a walk-in clinic. You mm-hmm. can go to your PCP. You can go to the emergency room. And when you go in and you tell them those symptoms, they'll check you out, get your blood pressure, obviously, check you on a machine that we call an electrocardiogram machine. And it doesn't hurt. They take these little electrodes. They're a little bit sticky, and they're not as sticky as a Band-Aid,
mm-hmm.
but they have a little sticky on them like a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put those across their chest, the front of their chest, and look at the electricity on the heart. So when they do that, they can see exactly in time, in real time, what your heart is doing and how it's beating. Is that top and that bottom part working together? Because
mm-hmm.
they can see that on an electrical. It's just crazy how we can do yeah. that. But your heart does give off an electrical impulse when it beats. That's how it beats.
Mm-hmm.
It makes that muscle move. So an EKG doesn't hurt, very simple. Any office has them.
Yeah.
Primary care, it's a main staple machine that you will see in every outpatient clinic
yeah.
and inpatient. So that's the easiest way
mm-hmm.
to get it diagnosed. Now, if they may not see it right then,
yeah.
Yep. So, you know, if this is a fluttering or a pounding that comes and goes, mm-hmm. which a lot of times it does at mm-hmm. first, it'll come, you'll have a rapid heartbeat or skipping beats, and then yep. all of a sudden it'll go away. So when you go get that EKG or electrocardiogram done, they might not see it right then. Right. They may say, huh, everything looks great.
Normal rhythm.
Right. Normal. Now. Miss Emily, I don't know. You know, this looks good. Let's keep an eye on it. So then they may refer you to get a monitor put, an external monitor that you wear. We call mm-hmm. it a Holter monitor. Mm-hmm. And you can wear it for 7 days. You can wear it for 14 days. You could actually wear it for a whole month.
Yeah.
And it'll watch you continuously that whole time that you have that on. You would take it off to shower, obviously, but that would be the next step that we would monitor. And that's just an EKG or an electrocardiogram that we do continuously over mm-hmm. days. And there's somebody in a little booth somewhere that works for that company that the Holter monitor is made with that's watching your heartbeat every second of the day. So if you have that feeling come back, you can usually press a button and it'll mark that time and date on that monitor, and it'll let that person that's in that booth know, oh, okay, so I see this on their electricity. Oh, they did have a symptom. They were short of breath then.
Right.
And then that's another way they can diagnose it. And a lot of times that has to happen. So if you go in and you do go into an urgent care or PCP and they don't see anything right away on that EKG, you know, ask to be sent somewhere to get a Holter monitor. Your primary care doctor can order that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to see a cardiologist to get a external monitor put on.
Yep.
And then the last thing is they can implant a monitor under your skin. That's it's about the size of a thumb drive mm-hmm. that you would put on your computer, and then that will watch you for months.
Yeah.
To see if you have any irregular heartbeats. So, you know, we're talking about atrial fibrillation today, which is not lethal. That is not a heart rhythm that will kill you. Mm-hmm. And I want the listeners to understand that, but there are some rhythms that can, and that's why we have, you know, the AEDs and we train people in CPR. That's different. Those are right. different symptoms. But I do want the listeners to know that if they get short of breath and they have chest pain, if you've noticed, I've not said chest pain this whole time, along with shortness of breath, along with that pounding, lightheadedness, then they need to call 911.
Yeah.
I do want to make that clear for listeners that if you have chest pain, please call.
That's different.
Yes. And don't drive yourself.
Yes. Good tip.
Yeah.
So on the Holter monitors that mm-hmm. you're talking about that people wear, these devices, I had to wear one time long ago in college. And they've come a long way, and they're smaller
yes.
than they used to be. So are they determining how long you wear it based on how frequent you're having the symptoms? How do they usually determine that?
Typically, most times we'll put it on you for 2 weeks. Now, if you have symptoms before that 2 weeks is up, before the 14 days, let's say you have them at day five, day seven, day eight, we can go ahead and call you in and get treatment rolling. It's not like we have to wait 14 days to bring you back in. But that's usually the most common is a 14-day Holter
okay.
monitor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's how AFib is diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for telling us why early detection is important and the distinction between symptoms with AFib versus other potentially life-threatening heart conditions. Risk factors. You've mm-hmm. talked a little bit about risk factors. So can you elaborate on some of the risk factors for developing atrial fibrillation? And can it be prevented?
Depends. So we in the medical world have, modifiable risk factors, mm-hmm. which are things that are in my control. I can yep. fix them. I can change them. I can do whatever I need to.
Yeah.
And then there's non-modifiable risk factors. So, and those are things you can't change. So things that you cannot change is if you have an aunt or a mom, dad, brother, sister, a family history that is strong with atrial fibrillation, then it's in your genetics. It's yeah. something that you need to be watching out for. And yeah. you can't change that.
Yeah.
But the things you can change are if you have high blood pressure, you need to get that under control.
Okay.
It needs to be below 130 on top and below 80 on the bottom. And that is all the time. You know, I have people come into the clinic and they'll say, oh, my blood pressure normally at home is such and such. And yeah, but today it's really high. So maybe we need to talk about some changes.
Mm-hmm.
So high blood pressure is one. Heart disease is another one. And that would be known heart disease. So you've had a heart attack. You have blockages that you know of. You've had to have a stent in the past.
Yeah.
Diabetes, so sugar diabetes. Sleep apnea is one that we don't talk about much, and we might want to talk about that in the next segment.
Yeah.
And then the last one that's controllable is heavy alcohol use. So when I say heavy, that is more than 3 drinks a day.
Okay.
And we can quantify that as well for drinks. But those things are modifiable. We can control our weight. We can control our high blood pressure. If we have heart disease, we can take medications and nutrition to reverse mm-hmm. that. And heavy alcohol use definitely is within our control.
Yeah. So a lot of risk factors that maybe we could do something about.
Absolutely.
Not all of them.
Yep.
Okay. More when we come back.
Welcome back to Local Matters, Health Matters. We're continuing our conversation about heart health and atrial fibrillation awareness month. So we've talked about diagnosing AFib, we've talked about risk factors, you know, all the important things that we want patients and the public to understand about atrial fibrillation and heart health in general. But now I would like to talk a little bit about treatment and lifestyle. So can Dr. Mabry, can you tell us what are the current treatment options for
Sure.
patients who have atrial fibrillation?
There's actually a lot more than there used to be. So mm-hmm. we have medications is usually the mainstay to start out with.
Okay.
And then if that doesn't work, then we usually go to a procedure,
okay.
Which would be done by a cardiologist. And there's certain cardiologists that are specialized in electrophysiology,
mm-hmm.
Which is the letter E, the letter P. So if you look up for a cardiologist and you look up an EP specialist, those are cardiologists that only deal with heart rhythms. And that mm-hmm. could be ventricular rhythms, atrial rhythms, but they can do procedures that will correct that. So two options. So the first one I'll talk about briefly is medications. And really, it's two kinds of medications. The first heart medication we give you is to help control the rate of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll either slow it down or keep it from skipping beats. Because you don't want the heart to go too fast all the time because it'll wear it out. We talked about heart failure
right.
as one of the complications. So usually we're controlling the heart rate. So the second medication that people with atrial fibrillation will be put on is some kind of blood thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be anything from aspirin all the way up to Coumadin, which has to be regulated. There's newer medications that are blood thinners out that do not have to be checked with a finger stick or have to have come in and get blood work done, that they can also be put on.
Yeah.
Pradaxa is one. I'm trying to think of another one. But so blood thinner, some kind of blood thinner, along with controlling the heart rate. And that's the two mainstays.
So what's the blood thinner for?
So we talked about in the first segment the two complications of atrial fibrillation, and the first one was a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a blood clot. And so in atrial fibrillation, the top parts of the heart are just kind of quivering,
mm-hmm.
and so the blood is not being squished out.
Okay.
So it can sit there and become a clot, just like
right.
you would get a blood clot on your skin. You know, if you cut yourself, it's the same kind of thing. It's not moving, so it's going to become a clot. So a blood thinner is going to prevent that clot from forming.
Okay. So we're taking the blood thinner for prevention.
Prevention.
Okay.
And then the heart rate, control the heart rate also prevents heart failure. So I'm preventing a stroke and I'm preventing heart failure.
Okay.
And it does make you feel better, too, to have it not skipping around. And,
yeah.
And usually people. So if that works and the patient's satisfied with that, great. But right. a lot of times we'll try to, if they're in that atrial fibrillation and it's a new thing for them, it's kind of like the heart hadn't got used to it yet. So we can actually give a person a shock, an electrical shock, and get their heart back in a regular rhythm. So, okay. And we call that cardioversion. Mm-hmm. And it's just an electric shock and it just resets the heart rhythm. That's okay. all it does. So, we talked about electricity going across the heart. I'm just interrupting it so it'll go back and reset itself. And sometimes that works, but the patient has to, we have to make sure that the patient is either on a blood thinner or we can look with a ultrasound machine and make sure that they don't have any blood clots in their heart before we do that cardioversion. That's not something that, like, you would go in the first time, they would get an EKG and then say, oh, we're going to shock your heart, like they do on TV.
Yeah.
You know, I always laugh at the TV shows. Right. We have to make sure there are no blood clots before we can shock you. So,
okay. And where would someone have that procedure done at?
They would at the hospital. It would be an outpatient procedure most of the time if they're stable.
Okay.
So, but it's a in and out
okay.
procedure. Yeah, and they'll give you a little medicine too to so you don't remember getting shocked because that's not comfortable to have electricity placed. You know. Mm-hmm. Across your chest. So they will give you some medicine that you don't really remember it, which is helpful. If that doesn't seem to work, or you're a good candidate for another kind of procedure, the specialized cardiologist, who's an electrophysiologist, the EP doctor, they call him, he can actually go in and just do a what we call an ablation, starts with an A, ablation, and they just destroy little tiny areas of the heart tissue, and usually they do it with heat, and cause the electricity to go in the correct pattern. And they're okay. super smart about it. They can map the whole electricity across the heart. It's actually really cool.
Yeah.
And so they go in and they find the areas that it's misfiring. And they just do some little cuts, and so then it bypasses that area. It's kind of, that's called an ablation. Yeah.
Okay.
So those are the options. And some people just need medication and blood thinners.
And that's the ablation, that's an outpatient procedure typically.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it can also be outpatient. And they go in just like you would go in for a heart catheterization.
Okay.
Same kind of lab, but it's called an EP lab. And, then they just destroy those little tiny areas. So it's AFib is very treatable. Especially if you catch it early on and get medication, and if it's a new onset and your heart hasn't gotten used to that yet, it's actually quite easy or simple. I shouldn't say easy. It's simple to have these procedures done in order to get your heart rhythm back, and you'll feel better.
Yeah. So several treatment options available then. What about lifestyle changes, like diet,
you
exercise?
Could probably guess. Yes, you could probably guess, Dr. Lee.
All those. How do they impact AFib risk or management?
So the main lifestyle changes are, because we talked about risk factors, right? We talked about high blood pressure being a risk factor. So obviously maintaining a normal, healthy blood pressure is a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
Reducing your alcohol intake. And then some people can't have any alcohol. They're so sensitive to that.
Yes.
So it not even just reducing it, but eliminating it completely. Is a big lifestyle change for people. So exercising safely is also recommended. And when I say that, you would want to wait until either you had your monitor on or you had that medication in place and you were on a blood thinner before you really started an exercise routine. And they have cardiac rehab at the hospital. It's an outpatient area of the hospital. It's actually connected to Tennessee Heart here in town. And there's great nurses down there that will monitor you on an electrocardiogram while you're exercising to make sure you're safe and what level of exercise you can maintain.
Yeah. So maybe they need to get their prescribed exercise regimen from their doctor.
So, if you're short of breath and you're lightheaded, you don't need to be going out and doing a new exercise program thinking you're just out of shape. I highly recommend people to get their heart checked, that it's working properly, and then, start an exercise program. But if you need to, cardiac rehab's great.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, heart-healthy diet, is what we always tell patients.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Lee, what is a heart-healthy diet?
We've talked about heart-healthy a lot.
We have.
So, we want fresh fruits,
yes,
vegetables. We want to limit our sodium intake.
Yes.
We don't want processed or packaged foods.
Yep.
You know, healthier meats versus your fatty meats. We think about our arteries. We don't want to, you know, impact and clog our arteries that you talked about.
That's
you
right.
Use the pump system.
Yep, yep. Pipes.
The pipes, uh-huh. Yes. You know, when you think of your grains, you want healthy whole grains as well, plenty of fiber.
Yes. Fiber is excellent to get flush all that stuff out of your blood.
Yes. Fiber does multiple things for your body.
It does. I love oatmeal.
And we do not get enough of it in our diets in America.
No.
What am I missing?
No, you hit it all. Salt is a biggie too. That helps with blood pressure as well.
Added salt.
Yeah. And portion sizes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we don't realize how we overeat in America because we do have so many foods available to us and buffets and, you know, portion sizes when you go out.
Every meal is a combo.
Every meal is a combo. So combo. Portion sizes is definitely something I'd watch. Fried food.
Yes.
In the South, what do we love?
We love fried food.
I love fried food. Yeah. What else do we love? Sweet tea.
Yeah.
Mm. So limiting.
In moderation.
In moderation. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
So if a listener is concerned about their heart rhythm, or they think they may have atrial fibrillation or AFib, what do we want to tell them to do first?
First, I would get that checked. I would get an EKG from somebody. Okay. And it doesn't have to be even if you're on vacation. You can do a walk-in clinic. They're everywhere now. Everywhere in any small town. And just remember that it may sound scary, atrial fibrillation, this big fancy word, but knowledge is power, and that's what we're doing today. And that's what Dr. Lee and I want to do for the community, is letting people know that there's risk factors associated with it, but you need to work with your healthcare team. You know, if you have a primary care, great. If you don't, the health department is a great place to find a primary care provider in your area. So, you know, working with the healthcare team, sticking to a treatment plan, using those lifestyle changes that we know about, but getting it checked out. If you're lightheaded and have a irregular heartbeat or feel bad, early detection hopefully is what the listeners have gotten out of this, and the treatment can prevent strokes and keep your heart healthy.
Yeah. Don't ignore it.
Do not ignore it.
So, a lot of people use the internet and resources. Are there places, websites that people can go that are reliable for information about heart health and AFib? Anywhere that you would recommend?
Absolutely. So the American Heart Association, the AHA, has wonderful resources for diet changes that you can make, exercise changes, and a lot of those sites also can tell you a good provider. That's a certified, board-certified provider. Now, the ones here at Tennessee Heart and at the hospital and the primary care in this area, we have a wonderful resources here. Livingston Hospital, Cookeville Regional, great places to.
So American Heart Association.
AHA.org. It's very easy.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining us today and sharing your expertise as we recognize National AFib Awareness Month this September. We encourage our listeners to be proactive about their heart health, get screened if they have symptoms, and make lifestyle changes that can make a difference.